Hello, I'm Joseph Kassa, and welcome to this podcast where the AI team does a deep dive into some application of systems thinking.
Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going to be, we're diving into the world of systems integration.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. We're unpacking a presentation by David Hetherington.
Okay.
He's a principal at System Strategy, Inc. And the title's pretty appropriate, Systems Integration, a Complex Challenge.
I like it. Straight to the point.
Yeah, no kidding. And, you know, Hetherington's background is really diverse. He's worked on a ton of different stuff. I mean, digital phones, offshore oil rigs.
Wow.
Yeah. And even minivan infotainment systems.
Okay, so we've got a wide range here.
Yeah, we're definitely in good hands. So we're going to explore some common pitfalls, you know, those organizational dynamics that can make or break these projects. And of course, you know, the strategies for success.
The fun stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And to make it even more real, we're going to look at two real-world case studies. A jackup oil rig.
Okay.
And a cutting-edge minivan infotainment system.
Mm.
So pretty wide range there.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. So right off the bat, what I find interesting is that Hetherington acknowledges that systems integration, especially when you have multiple external suppliers, it's just inherently complex.
Right, right.
And he actually categorizes organizations into these two distinct archetypes. He calls them the marching band.
Okay.
And the goat rodeo.
The goat rodeo. Okay. I'm intrigued.
Yeah. So think about, you know, your own experiences.
Yeah.
Have you worked with organizations that resemble a tightly coordinated marching band?
Okay.
Or a maybe slightly more chaotic goat rodeo?
I think I've seen a little bit of both, honestly.
Yeah, probably most of us.
Yeah.
So the marching band is kind of what you'd expect, right? Long funding cycles, mature processes, pretty stable teams, and they're usually focused on optimizing already effective systems.
So they have their act together.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
But then you have the goat rodeo. And as the name suggests, it's it can be a bit unpredictable. Funding's inconsistent. Processes are immature. Every project feels like you're starting from scratch.
Oh, I've been there.
Teams are constantly changing. And the main focus is just survival.
Yeah, just trying to keep your head above water.
Exactly.
It's interesting how he connects these organizational styles to some common pitfalls in systems integration.
Yeah, and he actually pulls in some research from Bent Fleiberg's book, Mega Projects and Risk, to kind of illustrate his point.
Oh, okay.
And the book found that there's this tendency towards cost underestimation in a lot of projects, and there's this huge pressure to show progress really quickly.
Yeah, I can definitely see how that would lead to problems. Rushing things, cutting corners.
Exactly. And that pressure to show progress quickly, it can be especially detrimental in a goat rodeo environment.
Right, where things are already chaotic.
Exactly. And Hetherington even cautions against, you know, going too far in the other direction, like over-engineering, getting bogged down and, you know, too many processes, especially early on.
So finding that balance.
Right. He basically says there are diminishing returns with any method, no matter how promising it seems.
Don't get lost in the weeds before you've even figured out what you're building, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So it's about finding that balance between rigor and agility. But how do, you know, economic and sociological factors play into all of this?
Well, Hetherington uses this really relatable example. He talks about the cost of dinner in Austin, Texas.
Oh, okay. I'm listening. I love food analogies.
Yeah. And he uses this to illustrate the bias towards cost underestimation, something that we see in so many projects, right? People have this idea in their head of what something should cost, regardless of how complex it actually is.
Right. Like everyone wants a Picasso, but no one wants to pay for it.
Exactly.
And I imagine this tendency to underestimate costs, it extends to systems integration too, right?
Absolutely. And Hetherington actually dives into net present value, or NPV.
Okay.
And how it often leads to strategic misrepresentation of project costs, especially when it comes to systems integration efforts.
So they downplay how much it actually costs to make all the systems work together.
Yeah. The intricacies of integration, they're often downplayed or completely overlooked.
And that sets you up for some serious budget overruns down the line.
Exactly. And to illustrate this point, he contrasts the approaches of, let's say, Boeing and NASA with those of SpaceX.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because SpaceX is known for being, you know, more daring.
Right.
blowing stuff up, learning from their mistakes.
Exactly. And they have a much higher tolerance for risk. They focus on rapid iteration. And that's in stark contrast to, let's say, those more traditional aerospace giants who are much more risk averse. You know, everything's heavily documented.
Right. Makes sense.
And this difference, it ties directly to the concept of technology readiness level, or TRL.
So you wouldn't expect a startup with, like, brand new technology to have the same rigorous processes as a company that's been building airplanes for decades.
Exactly. You wouldn't. And Hetherington cautions against imposing those heavyweight processes on organizations that are still in those early stages of experimentation.
Mm.
And he has this great quote to drive this point home. He says, "Never try to teach a pig to sing."
Okay. I love that. So it's about recognizing that some organizations, they just aren't suited to that really disciplined systems engineering approach.
Yeah, you can't force a culture that's resistant to change. And for folks who are dealing with those tricky cultural situations, Hetherington recommends checking out the book The Power of Habit for some inspiration, specifically the chapter about Paul O'Neill's safety-focused turnaround of Alcoa.
Okay.
So now let's move on to some common anti-patterns that Hetherington identifies in systems integration projects.
Okay, the things to avoid.
Yeah, exactly. He starts with enjoying the shopping trip.
Okay. So like getting caught up in all the new tech.
Exactly. It's that excitement for new technologies. You get caught up in buying the latest and greatest gadgets, but you kind of overlook the reality of actually integrating them into your existing systems.
Oh, yeah. I think we've all experienced that at some point.
Right. And then he uses another analogy, the late dinner guest, to describe like a really disruptive integration challenge.
Right.
Imagine, you know, a guest arriving late to a formal dinner party, totally underdressed, with, you know, an unexpected plus one.
Oh, I can see it now.
Yeah, total chaos. And he compares that disruptive guest to a subsystem that arrives late, unstable, and with, you know, unexpected baggage, just throwing those carefully laid integration plans into disarray.
And it could lead to, like, costly delays and rework.
Yeah.
Right. Especially if the project is already under pressure.
Absolutely. And then there's the pushing the problem onto someone else anti-pattern.
Yes. Pass the buck.
Exactly. Organizations try to offload that burden of systems integration onto another party, hoping they'll just magically make the problem disappear.
But that's just setting them up for failure, right?
Yeah.
Because you need the resources, the expertise, the support to do it successfully.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of times what's behind that is procrastination in resourcing.
Oh, yeah. Classic procrastination.
Yeah. And Hetherington actually shows visually in his outline how resources for integration are often allocated way too late in the game.
Right. And then you're scrambling.
Yeah. Those rushed, haphazard integration efforts, they always result in problems down the line.
Makes sense.
Which leads to another anti-pattern, organizational amnesia.
Okay.
It's like this tendency to forget the lessons learned from previous integration challenges.
Oh, so the same mistakes get repeated over and over again.
Sadly, yeah.
Ugh. Okay, what else?
Well, then there's the issue of missing contractual terms. Hetherington really stresses the importance of clear contractual language that specifically addresses those systems' integration responsibilities and expectations.
Because if it's not in writing, it's basically open to interpretation, right?
Right.
And probably misinterpretation.
Exactly. And finally, he uses this really vivid analogy. He calls it the all-you-can-eat risk buffet.
Okay, I'm hungry.
To describe organizations that just overload projects with unnecessary risks.
They're taking on too much.
Way too much. And he actually connects this tendency to the infotainment system case study that we'll be talking about later.
Okay, can't wait to hear about that one. But first, let's dive into that jack-up rig case study.
Okay.
So, Hetherington takes us to a shipyard in Singapore where they're building this specialized oil drilling ship.
Okay.
It's a jackup rig.
Right.
For a major drilling fleet operator.
Got it.
And to add another layer of complexity, a European oil company is the main customer.
Okay.
And, you know, after the Deepwater Horizon disaster, they're demanding DNV ISDS software safety certification.
Which I'm guessing the shipyard had zero experience with.
Yeah, pretty much. So they bring in Hetherington, the expert, to have them navigate all this new territory.
Mm.
But it sounds like he walked into, you know, a bit of a hornet's nest.
Okay, I'm sensing a story here.
Oh, yeah. So the stakeholder landscape was incredibly complex. You've got the shipyard, the drilling fleet operator, the European oil company, various equipment suppliers, and even, get this, an advertising video company.
Wait, an advertising video company? What do they have to do with building an oil rig?
You'll see. But all those different players, it just created this tangled web of communication paths.
I bet.
And to make matters worse, there was no unified system specification.
Oh no.
Yeah, they were relying on this chaotic collection of previous contracts and emails.
Oh wow, that sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Pretty much. So imagine a massive ship, right,
Okay.
with three legs that are like 200 meters long.
Wow.
And they ram those legs into the ocean floor. The ship then lifts itself up like more than 60 meters above the water.
Oh my goodness.
And then this 5,000-ton drilling derrick
Yeah.
is skidded over the edge.
That's a lot of moving
Yeah,
parts.
that's a jack-up oil rig.
That's a mental image I won't soon forget.
Yeah, and just the scale and complexity of these offshore drilling operations,
Yeah.
it's mind-boggling, let alone all the systems, sensors, actuators, and everything involved.
Right. And then you've got that DNVGL ISDS standard focusing on software safety, which is a pretty new concept for shipyards at the time.
Yeah, so most of them were unprepared for the level of rigor and documentation that it required.
And it wasn't just the physical integration that was a challenge. They had to deal with this whole new layer of software safety requirements.
Yeah, and to make matters even worse, the Singapore shipyard was forced to take on both the ship construction and the equipment integration roles.
Oh, wow. So they were doing double duty.
Yeah, which is not typical in the industry. They usually specialize in one or the other.
Yeah, that's a lot to take on.
Talk about a trial by fire. And to top it all off, there were over 140 standards involved in the project, spanning like 50 years and 30 different jurisdictions.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's crazy. So to bring some order to all of this chaos,
Yeah.
Hetherington chose to use SysML modeling
Okay.
to create a library of requirements.
Now, for our listeners who might not be familiar, can you explain what SysML is?
Sure. So SysML stands for Systems Modeling Language.
Yeah.
It's basically a powerful tool used to specify, analyze, design, and verify complex systems, like, this jack-up rig.
Okay, so it helps them make sense of all those moving parts.
Exactly.
But I bet that didn't go over well with everyone on the project.
You're right. Hetherington encountered resistance from some of the shipyard engineers who were used to, more traditional, informal practices.
Of course, change is never easy, especially in those well-established industries.
Right. And Hetherington also emphasizes the importance of validation, sea trials, and commissioning. You can't just build a massive oil rig and hope it all works perfectly at sea.
Right. So how did the sea trials go?
Well, Hetherington describes this common industry practice. He calls it systems integration, phase two,
Okay.
which basically involves sending the ship off with a bunch of technicians on board, hoping they can debug and fix any issues during transport.
Oh, so they're just like troubleshooting on the fly.
Pretty much.
That seems incredibly inefficient. Is that just the norm in the oil industry?
Yeah, sadly it was at the time.
Yeah.
And the oil industry just seemed to accept these cost overruns as a routine expense.
Wow. So what was like the biggest integration hurdle in this case?
Hetherington tells this story about a meeting with a commissioning manager. And the manager just bluntly states that the biggest problem is, quote, getting the boxes to talk with each other.
The classic communication breakdown.
Exactly. And Hetherington connects this to the OSI model, which describes the different layers of network communication. They were dealing with legacy PLC technologies, programmable logic controllers, which often rely on like manual configurations and don't easily integrate with modern systems.
Right, so they're trying to make old technology play nice with new technology. And I bet those supplier engineers looked at him like he was speaking a foreign language when he showed them his SysML model.
You got it. And remember that advertising video company?
Oh, yeah. What about them?
Well, they actually caused an unexpected cost overrun by failing to include a crucial conveyor belt in their animation.
Wait, so a minor detail in a marketing video caused a major cost overrun?
Yeah, the graphic artists weren't engineers, and they didn't understand the significance of that conveyor belt.
Oh, wow.
But this seemingly insignificant detail actually highlighted the oil company's shifting priorities. Oil prices were falling,
Right.
and suddenly software safety and all that meticulous systems integration, it took a backseat to cost-cutting measures.
So it's a classic example of how, like, those external factors can just completely derail a project.
Exactly. So what were some of the key takeaways from this jack-up rig case study?
Well, Hetherington highlights three main points. First, the challenges of involuntary systems integration,
Okay.
then the resistance to new methodologies in established industries, and finally, that the prioritization of software functional safety is often quite low.
Wow, that's a lot to unpack. Okay, let's shift gears and dive into that infotainment system case study. This one involves a top U.S. minivan manufacturer, and they decide they want to take control of their infotainment software.
Okay.
They're shifting from relying on a tier one supplier to developing their own Android-based system in-house.
So they're bringing it in-house.
Yeah, exactly.
What was their motivation for that?
Well, they wanted to gain more control over features and, of course, reduce their reliance on those expensive tier one suppliers.
Okay, that makes sense. But I'm guessing it wasn't as straightforward as they hoped.
You guessed it. Their game plan was ambitious but risky.
Okay, walk me through it. What were they trying to achieve?
So they licensed Android. They created this distributed network of 9 different electronic control units.
Well, 9.
Or ECUs.
Yeah.
They engaged multiple tier one suppliers for hardware.
Okay.
They contracted with specialized software vendors. And they outsourced the majority of the development to a major software development services company. But the teams were primarily located in Romania and Argentina.
Oh, wow. So a lot of moving parts and spread out geographically, too.
Yeah. And one of the biggest risks they took was expecting the main hardware tier one supplier to willingly cooperate with this new model.
Oh, even though they were losing out on all those lucrative software development contracts.
Exactly. It's like they were choosing the riskiest option at every turn.
Yeah, it seems that way. Hetherington describes it as the OEM visiting the all-you-can-eat risk buffet.
Okay, I like that analogy.
Yeah, they piled their plate high with an overly complicated network architecture, untested chip and cabling technologies, minimal written requirements, and the challenges of managing remote development at, you know, a rural site.
Oh, wow.
There was also resistance to formal architecture and use case definition.
Yeah.
Excessive feature bloat, reliance on open source software, and get this, a completely new supplier business model.
Oh my goodness, they really did go all in on the risk buffet.
Yeah, they did. And because of all that, they put that software development services company in a really impossible situation.
Okay.
They were tasked with systems integration, but they had absolutely no leverage over the other suppliers.
Oh, so they were set up to fail from the beginning.
Pretty much. And to illustrate just how chaotic this project was, Hetherington describes a specific problem.
Okay.
He calls it the boot speed problem.
A boot speed problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And it all boils down to this seemingly minor cost-saving decision on a sorting algorithm in the networking chip.
Okay. Sorting algorithm.
Yeah.
How could that possibly cause a major problem?
So think about how we use our cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
We restart them maybe a few times a year. So a slightly slower boot time isn't a big deal, right?
Right.
In a vehicle, that rear view camera needs to be operational almost instantly after ignition.
I see. It's a safety issue.
Exactly. So this seemingly minor delay in the infotainment system booting up actually caused a major safety issue.
Wow. Talk about unintended consequences.
Right. And it just highlights how important it is to consider the specific context and use cases when you're making design decisions, even ones that seem really minor.
You can't just assume that what works in one domain, like a cell phone,
mm-hmm.
will work seamlessly in another, like a car.
Exactly. And another thing that showed the lack of coordination and accountability was the chaos of their shared JRA ticketing system.
Oh, JRA, yeah. Mm. A lot of our listeners are probably familiar with that. What went wrong there?
Well, it basically became this black hole of confusion.
Okay.
With over 20,000 tickets.
Oh, my goodness.
And constant rerouting.
Wow.
It was almost impossible to track progress or hold anyone accountable.
That sounds like an absolute nightmare.
It was. And to add to the dysfunction, the OEM held this brief bug zero celebration.
Bug zero.
Yeah.
So they thought reaching zero bugs meant the software was perfect and they were done.
It seems that way. But of course, as soon as they resumed testing, new bugs inevitably popped up.
Because software development never really ends, right?
Mm-hmm. It's this constant cycle of iteration and improvement.
Okay.
And in this case, the pressure to deliver this perfect product, it led to some pretty extreme measures.
Like what?
Suppliers were literally held hostage at the OEM's remote development site as production ground to a halt.
Oh, wow. The pressure was on.
They were waiting for that infotainment system to be stabilized.
So they were stuck there until they fixed it.
Pretty much. And to make matters even worse, the software development director was, let's just say he was a textbook example of a polar narcissist.
A narcissist leading a software development project.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a recipe for success.
It wasn't. He thrived on chaos and resisted any attempts to create a clear recovery plan.
Oh, wow. So he was more focused on maintaining his power and control than delivering a functional product.
Exactly.
So what happened? Did they ever get the infotainment system working?
Hetherington doesn't really go into detail about the project's final outcome. He just shares his own experience with this manager and the constant undermining of, you know, those local management efforts, which eventually led him to leave the project and head back to Austin.
Probably a wise decision.
Yeah, it was. But this case study, it really highlights the dangers of involuntary systems integration, the consequences of taking on too much risk, and those challenges of navigating complex stakeholder dynamics, especially when you're dealing with, you know, individuals who actually benefit from maintaining that chaos.
These case studies, they're from completely different industries, but it seems like they have a lot in common. What stands out to you?
What I find fascinating is this concept of involuntary systems integration.
Meaning they were kind of forced into it.
Exactly. In both cases, the organizations, they didn't necessarily want to take on this burden of systems integration.
Okay.
But circumstances kind of pushed them into that role.
Like the shipyard being forced to handle both ship construction and equipment integration. Or the software development services company being, you know, thrown into the deep end with no real control over the other suppliers.
Exactly. And that involuntary aspect, it just adds this whole other layer of complexity to the challenge.
Because you're not just dealing with technical issues, you're also dealing with organizational resistance, conflicting priorities.
Right.
It really highlights the importance of, you know, adaptability and strategic thinking.
Absolutely.
So what can we learn from these case studies to improve our own approach to systems integration?
That's a great question.
And I think it's the perfect place to pause for now. We'll be right back to dive into some strategies for success. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. We just finished exploring some pretty disastrous systems integration scenarios.
Yeah, we've seen some things.
But don't worry, we're not leaving you hanging.
Not at all.
We're going to shift gears now and focus on strategies for success using, you know, all of Hetherington's insights.
We can definitely learn a lot from those case studies.
Right.
First and foremost, it's crucial to be realistic about the challenges of systems integration.
Okay.
Don't underestimate the complexity.
Right.
And, you know, the potential for things to go wrong.
Yeah, stuff happens.
And we have to remember those economic and sociological factors we talked about earlier, right?
That pressure to underestimate costs, all that risk.
Exactly. And we need to be aware of those different organizational archetypes.
The marching band and the goat rodeo.
Yeah, and adapt our approach accordingly. So how do we tailor our strategies for success based on those archetypes?
That's the million-dollar question.
Well, Hetherington suggests different approaches for each. So let's start with the marching band organizations.
Okay, the ones with the mature processes.
Yes.
And that laser focus on optimization.
Exactly. So for our listeners who are working with a marching band organization, where should they start?
Yeah, what's step one?
Well, the key is to understand their existing systems and identify those specific areas for improvement.
Wow.
Don't try to reinvent the wheel, right?
If it ain't broke.
Focus on making those small enhancements to an already well-defined system.
Got it. So they've got a solid foundation. It's about fine-tuning.
Hetherington advises collecting and studying historical performance data to pinpoint, you know, potential bottlenecks or inefficiencies. Think about your own projects.
Sure.
Have you ever tracked data like this?
I've definitely seen the value in data-driven decision-making.
Right.
It's much easier to advocate for improvements when you have the evidence.
Exactly. Once you understand that current state, you can set clear, measurable goals.
Okay.
And track your progress.
So don't just say, we want to improve systems integration. Mm. Be specific. Define what you want to achieve.
Exactly. Now, when it comes to goat rodeo organizations.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
It's a whole different ballgame.
How do you even begin to approach systems integration when everything is constantly changing and unpredictable?
It's tough. Hetherington really emphasizes understanding the stakeholder landscape and their motivations. Who are the key players? What are their goals? What are their fears?
Right, right.
And this is important. Who are those hidden stakeholders?
The ones who might not be directly involved, but they still have a lot of influence.
Yeah, like the person who controls the budget or someone who always points fingers when things go wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Once you understand the stakeholders, you can start triaging the problems.
Right.
You can't fix everything at once.
Right. Prioritize.
Exactly. Focus on the issues that will have the biggest impact.
Pick your battles.
Right. And like we mentioned earlier, it's crucial to fight for control of that payment stream.
Because money talks.
You got it.
Okay.
If you can incentivize suppliers to cooperate, prioritize those integration efforts, You're already halfway there.
Align everyone's interests.
Exactly. So how do you make sure that systems integration is baked into the project from the get-go?
Yeah, that's important.
Hetherington stresses early involvement. Get those requirements clearly defined in the supplier contracts.
Shift left. Don't wait till the end.
Exactly. He also advocates for a clear set of user stories or operational scenarios that define the outcomes up front.
So everyone knows what the system is supposed to do.
Right. Those user stories provide a roadmap for integration testing.
It makes sense.
And to stay on track and avoid procrastination.
Always a good idea.
Hetherington recommends bucketing test cases into manageable groups and mapping them onto a project timeline.
Breaking it down into smaller chunks.
Exactly. To facilitate collaboration, he suggests holding those regular interface workshops, bringing those suppliers together.
So they can hash it out.
Define those communication sequences for each user story.
So everyone understands how their piece fits into the bigger picture.
Right. And to speed up that testing process, he recommends simple software mockups.
Okay.
You can simulate the behavior of the real components, allows for early testing and debugging, even before the actual hardware is available.
That's smart. Why wait if you can catch those problems early?
Exactly. And finally, Hetherington emphasizes the importance of, say it with me, communication.
Communication.
It seems obvious, but it's so often overlooked, especially in those chaotic environments.
Right. Stay vigilant, stay informed, and stay connected.
Regular status calls, progress reports, on-site inspections, consistent communication throughout the process.
Especially in a goat rodeo, things can go sideways fast.
Exactly. Now, all of these strategies are great, but let's face it, systems integration can be messy, unpredictable.
Definitely.
There's always a chance for unexpected challenges and setbacks.
No matter how well you plan.
So how do you deal with those situations? How do you stay sane in the midst of all that chaos? What does Hetherington say?
Yeah, how do you keep your cool when things are falling apart?
Well, he acknowledges that we're all human.
Okay.
We all make mistakes.
It's comforting.
Nobody's perfect.
I think it's easy to get caught up in that pressure to deliver a flawless product.
Oh, yeah.
And forget that mistakes are going to happen.
They are. And sometimes the best you can do is learn from those mistakes and try to do better next time.
It's all about continuous improvement.
Exactly. Embrace the process. Recognize that failure isn't the end of the world.
It's a learning opportunity.
Right. It's important to have a support system, too. You know, people you can trust.
Yeah.
To help you through those tough times.
Kind of celebrate the wins.
Absolutely. We're all in this together. Sometimes a little humor can help too.
Like Hetherington's quote about the pig.
Exactly. A good reminder that we don't always have control over everything.
And sometimes you just got to accept things as they are.
Focus on what you can control.
With that in mind, I think we're ready to wrap up this deep dive into the world of systems integration.
Yeah, I think so.
We've explored the challenges. We've looked at those real-world case studies.
And hopefully uncovered some valuable strategies for success.
So before we close, what are your final thoughts for our listeners as they embark on their own systems integration journeys?
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We've been, we've been talking about systems integration.
Yeah, all the fun stuff. And it's interesting, through, you know, Hetherington's examples and everything, one thing keeps coming up.
Yeah. What's that?
The human element.
Oh, right.
It's not just about the technology or the code.
Right. It's about the people.
Yeah. Their motivations, their fears.
Yeah.
You know, even their quirks.
Like that that software development director.
Oh, yeah. The narcissist.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
That can really derail a project.
Oh, absolutely. So whether it's, you know, resistance to change in a marching band or the chaos of a goat rodeo.
Yeah.
Understanding those human dynamics, it's so important for success.
You got to know how to work the people side of things.
Yeah, which is why leadership and, you know, good communication, emotional intelligence, those are so essential.
The soft skills, right?
Yeah, they're not so soft after all.
Not at all. They can really make or break a project, especially with systems integration.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of, you know, navigating all that complexity, I think Hetherington's emphasis on adaptability, that's another key takeaway.
Oh, for sure. There's no, like, one-size-fits-all solution to integration problems.
Right. You got to be flexible.
Yeah, resourceful, willing to change your approach, you know, depending on what you're dealing with.
Like his advice for those goat rodeo organizations. You know, triage the problems. Don't try to boil the ocean.
Exactly.
And sometimes, you know, knowing when to walk away, that's the smartest move.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you just got to cut your losses.
Yeah, like Hetherington with the infotainment system project.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get out of bad situation.
For your own sanity.
Exactly. So for our listeners who are out there tackling those systems integration challenges.
Yeah.
What's like the one piece of advice that, you know, the golden nugget you would give them?
I would say embrace the complexity. Don't be afraid of the challenge. See it as an opportunity.
Yeah, to learn, to grow.
Exactly. And remember, even experts like Hetherington, they hit roadblocks, they make mistakes. It's part of the process.
It's all about learning and getting better.
Exactly.
Systems integration, it's not for the faint of heart, but it can be really rewarding if you have the right mindset.
And don't forget, there are resources out there to help you, like that InCoC Wiley online library.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
And there's a whole community of people who've been there, done that. They're ready to share their experiences.
Absolutely. So reach out, you know, connect with your peers. Don't be afraid to ask for help. We're all in this together.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
All right, so on that note, I think we're going to wrap up this deep dive into systems integration.
Sounds good.
We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you found it insightful, engaging, and maybe even a little bit funny at times.
Until next time, keep learning, keep exploring, and keep integrating.
I hope you enjoyed today's deep dive. Why not take a moment and join the discussion in the LinkedIn group, Tackling Complex Problems? Take care.